good afternoon, and welcome to Power for the People here on solar-powered WERU-FM 89.9 in Blue Hill, 89.9 in Bangor, and streaming everywhere in our solar system at WERU.org. I'm your host, Steve Cowell. Today on Power for the People, we will revisit the impressive initiative called A Climate to Thrive, which has been underway on MDI, Mount Desert Island, since 2016. It became a 501c3 nonprofit in 2017, as I remember. And so I'm joined by Joanna Blackman, Executive Director, and by Wilson Haynes, the Manager of Community and Engagement Resilience. And I will say that I am especially pleased to be able to cover this program, actually for the third time here on WERU. But because of my long-term links with Acadia National Park as an Environmental Research Director at UMaine, collaborating with the College of the Atlantic, and as a former board member of Friends of Acadia. So a lot of commonalities here, not to mention my interest in renewable energy and things like that. So Joanna, let's start with you. Give us a brief background about what your background is that led you to become executive director, and then tell us just briefly about what your role is.
Well, thank you, Steve, for having us on and for covering this work again. We were really grateful to be here. So I started getting kind of tuned into climate change and concerned about climate change when I was in graduate school in San Francisco. I grew up in New England in New Hampshire, but moved out to San Francisco with my partner for graduate school. And we were out there for a typical rainy season in San Francisco. And then we were out there for one of the first rainy seasons when it did not rain. And so really, this was before kind of the big fire seasons there, but really got me interested in and attuned to and starting to think a lot about climate change. And so for a number of years there, I was engaged in climate action, very much on the resistance side of things, a lot of protests, a lot of direct action in that way. And my partner and I moved to MDI, where he had grown up after graduate school. And we got involved, our master's degrees were in counseling psychology, and we got involved in thinking a lot about how people psychologically were engaging with the topic of climate change, what motivated people to become engaged, to seek to be part of solutions, and what made for a really effective communication about climate change. And at the same time, we were both teaching yoga in Bar Harbor and developing a sense of community here. And as we talked with community members and they became aware of our interest in climate solutions, we were having more and more conversations about climate change. And from those conversations with folks like Gary and Glennon Friedman and others, Steve Katona, we decided that we wanted to put out a call and bring people together to talk about what we as the four towns on MDI could do about climate change in terms of local solutions. And so we were at those first potluck meetings in the fall of 2015, and I was newly pregnant with our first child. So action on climate change and solutions to climate change were very top of the mind for my husband and I. And I've been involved with ACT ever since. My child was born shortly after the launch of a Climate to Thrive, the formal public launch, and then had a second kiddo around the time that I was board chair. And it has been really meaningful to me to see a Climate to Thrive provide a space for the community to become really empowered in terms of seeking solutions to climate change through different presidencies, through different state governments, through different local governments, to really maintain that focus on what we as a community can be empowered to do and how we can work collaboratively together. And so when I was invited to become interim executive director in the fall of 2021, I did so not without some nerves, because I had so much respect for what A Climate to Thrive had grown to be and was doing. But it has been a true joy to serve in this role since that time. And the bulk of my work these days is focused on supporting our incredible team members like Wilson, on working with the board and with the broader community, because we are a community-based organization. Our our goals, our mission, our strategy are really infused by the priorities of the communities we serve. So working with both the board and really keeping an ear to what is needed to develop our strategy and our plan each year. And then I run programs like Local Leads the Way and some of our other initiatives as well. So that's a little bit about me, and I'm thrilled to be here.
And Wilson, tell us a little bit about your position, well, your background and your position.
Yeah, thanks so much, Steve. I'm really happy to be here today. So a little bit of my background. I grew up in Portland, Maine, and attended Maine Coast Waldorf School for my whole life up through 12th grade, which was really, really foundational in my interest in environmental issues and climate change. Waldorf education really integrates the environment into every aspect of the education. And so by the time I went off to college, I was really keen to continue to develop a skill set and understanding in environmental and climate issues. And so I majored in environmental studies at Wellesley College and graduated in 2023. And during my time at Wellesley College, I also participated in an ocean and coastal studies program through Williams College, called Williams Mystic, which really kind of geared my interest towards marine conservation and resilience. And so after I graduated, I ended up with a fellowship through Ocean Conservancy and Center for Coastal Studies in Provincetown, Massachusetts, focused on marine debris and plastics. And so for half of the internship or the fellowship, I got to, work on the ground with volunteers and communities, fishermen, with more of the direct action and support around marine debris and plastics. And then for the other half, I got to work with the Global Ghost Gear Initiative through Ocean Conservancy, which was focused more at a global scale, focusing on small grant making and communications. And so that gave me a really interesting perspective from the marine conservation side of things. And then I also ended up with a fellowship through the Governor's Office of Policy Innovation in the Future to focus on work with the Climate Council in Maine. And that is actually
And
how
that was before you joined a Climate to Thrive, was it?
that was before I joined A Climate to
Okay.
Thrive. Yeah, and I believe that was my initial introduction to Johanna, because Johanna was on the Energy Working Group. And yeah, after both of those experiences, I ended up at my role here at A Climate to Thrive as the manager of community engagement and resilience. And that role here is really dynamic because I have the opportunity to dive into the community engagement and education side of things. So at times, my role has looked like organizing opportunities for sustainability committees throughout the island to come together and share the initiatives they're working on and foster greater collaboration, opportunities for folks to dive into a climate-related book and gather together in thinking and discussing how they can be more involved in climate action, climate education with school groups. And then the resilience side of my work has really focused at this point through the Community Resilience Partnerships grants with the towns of Tremont and Southwest Harbor. And so in Tremont, they are working on a suite of grant actions that are related to coastal resilience. And so my work there is supporting a number of different initiatives related to climate-ready infrastructure, for example. So like preparing culverts and town wharves for sea level rise. Living shorelines is another area of that grant. And then in Southwest Harbor, the town is really focusing on general resilience planning. And so I'm leading that initiative there. And providing some assistance in community outreach for emergency preparedness related to climate. So it really is quite diverse and dynamic. And I felt so lucky to get to engage in such meaningful ways here in the community on MDI.
That sounds great. So, both of you have a big picture background, which, to my mind, is very important. I consider myself to have a big picture view, but then focusing, being able to focus in on the details that matter. And Wilson, let me not skip right by the fact that you did some outreach initiative with WERU on climate messaging. Tell us briefly about that.
So when I started at A Climate to Thrive, there was an existing program on WERU called Climate and Community. And that program is a 5-minute weekly spot that A Climate to Thrive has run for several years now, which is focused on really highlighting and uplifting the community efforts that are occurring throughout the state related to climate action with a solutions-oriented perspective. And so I jumped into that project with my time here at A Climate to Thrive, and through that program was offered an opportunity to engage with the Metcalfe Institute's Climate Ready Newsroom Fellowship with Amy Brown at WERU. And so together we participated in this training program where we got to hear from other newsrooms around New England about their experience reporting on climate and communicating climate-related issues to the public. And today actually is our final culminating event with staff members from Metcalfe Institute. But as part of that training, we also convened contributors for WERU to come together and talk a little bit more about, yeah, including you, Steve, to talk a little bit more about how we can continue to bolster climate communication in our community, make sure that folks understand the scientific underpinnings of these issues, as well as just exposure to what's happening in our communities, ways people can get involved, just the more that people know that this is something that matters to other people, I think is a way to really bring more people into this work.
Fantastic. And your mention of Tremont reminded me that I spent a summer during college in Tremont working for the Department of Marine Resources on coastal effects. So it was a few years ago, though. So we weren't talking about climate so much back in those days. So my understanding from a brief conversation that we had before we went on the air, that originally there were six initiatives that are now have become kind of a three initiative focus. And so maybe we can chat about those here in just a second, but let me just tell the listeners that you're listening to Power for the People here on WERU-FM 89.9 in Blue Hill and in Bangor. And my guests today are Johanna Blackman, Executive Director of A Climate to Thrive on MDI, and Wilson Hames, Manager of Community Engagement and Resilience. So let's shift to the on-the-ground focus. And again, you mentioned, Johanna, there were really three now. Let's see what we can do with those in maybe 10 minutes. And then, as I mentioned to you before we came on the air, I would like to spend a little time with advice for any other community that wants to get involved with you guys, or a community that wants to start something themselves. Because I think the model that you guys are doing is just really something we need to spread the word and get other people involved. So let's go to the focus areas that you mentioned, Johanna.
Sure. Thanks, Steve. So our work at this time and for a few years now has been organized into these three focus areas. So the first is clean energy for all. And A Climate to Thrive at its beginnings really had this strong focus on the transition to renewable energy and the ways in which we use energy and how we can use energy more efficiently in our communities, in our homes, our businesses, our buildings. And so our Clean Energy for All focus is infused with really a decade of investigation, experiential investigation into how the transition to renewable energy can be an opportunity to transition to an energy system that works better for ratepayers. And it has been a really illuminating process over the past 10 years. So we've done a lot of work on community-owned and community-sited solar, so the generation side of things, and that's municipal solar arrays on capped landfills, on larger rooftops, It's solarized programs that have arranged for bulk purchase rates to bring solar to homeowners' rooftops. It's been working with nonprofits to get them solar. It's been really looking into how to make solar ownership for communities more accessible, how to remove some of the barriers that currently exist, looking at how distributed clean energy generation paired with storage. So we're talking about battery storage there and gets wonky, but demand management technology that helps us control when we are using energy and when we aligning that with when energy is being produced cleanly. How that type of a system where communities own these distributed resources and have more control can actually lead to a more affordable and more resilient energy system. And then we've tried to bring what we've been learning on the ground to inform state planning, state policy, to help other communities with their own initiatives. So that's really the clean energy for all side of things. Right now, we're working on an energy coaching program in collaboration with a lot of communities throughout the state. And we've been really looking at working on and supporting plug-in solar and bringing plug-in solar to Maine. That's some of our big energy initiatives at the moment. And so
So
then,
you're behind the bill. You're supporting the bill in the legislature that hopefully will pass on that one. I mean, it was voted on in far right red Utah unanimously. So I certainly hope it passes here.
yes. Really, really excited. We've been doing a lot of work on that bill, in collaboration with Nicole Grachowski. Yeah. And so then the second initiative, which really has grown in the past 4 years or so, is the initiative that holds a lot of Wilson's work, and that's working on resilient, connected communities. And so there's, of course, overlap here at how we use and produce and distribute energy can make a community more or less resilient, and the resilience extends beyond our use of energy. And so, as we've seen a lot more climate impacts, thinking about the back-to-back storms we experienced in January a couple of years ago, it's really clear that communities can be taking action now to prepare themselves to be more resilient to climate impacts. And our approach to resilience work is to really try to think, yes, about infrastructure and how infrastructure will be impacted, but to try to expand beyond infrastructure to think about how social infrastructure can play a part of resilience, how an educated, connected, collaborative community is a more resilient community, and how resilience needs to happen not town by town, but with as much collaboration and resource sharing and integration regionally as possible, because the strength of one town is very connected to the strength of its neighbors. I don't know, Wilson, if there's anything you'd want to kind of say or highlight about that resilience side of our work.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you really hit the nail on the head there, but it is really interesting having conversations. This past winter, we've had several conversations in Southwest Harbor with community members, really trying to understand, based on their climate vulnerability assessment that was conducted by the Gulf of Maine Research Institute, like what areas are really rising to the top for people in terms of their concerns about climate impacts in the future. And there's definitely conversation about physical infrastructure. There's definitely concern around private property owners and what might happen to their shorefronts. But we're also hearing so much concern about these more social infrastructure, if you will, these sorts of questions of like how is communication happening? How are folks who may be more vulnerable to climate-related impacts or emergencies, how are they being cared for? These sorts of questions are coming up, and it is very clear that they are underrepresented, especially in the funding landscape and the support landscape in our state. And so I think A Climate to Thrive is really interested, as Johanna mentioned, in really building out opportunities for more interconnection and more ways that people can feel connected and supported as climate-related incidents become more commonplace.
Right. I'm kind of a, in my career, a combination of an energy guy and a resilience guy. And one thing that I did a fair bit of actually back in my private sector days was talk about stormwater. Because the more we have impervious surface and pave parking lots versus using porous asphalt or grass pavers or whatever the case may be, the more we create things that result in needing to re replace culverts. You know, I mean, if this place, if our environment was as permeable as it used to be 200 years ago, we'd be in a different situation. So I certainly hear you on that. I have a quick question on the clean energy side. Well, and let me just comment here for both you and for listeners in case people have missed it. The last two programs on this on Power for the People, because I felt it was important enough to wind up doing two programs. We talked about the return on investment for solar power, and especially with the decline in the 30% tax credit. So probably some people are going, well, no, I don't want to do it anymore. But the bottom line is, solar is still giving you a return on investment of 8 to 10% today. And as one of my guests pointed out to me, and I hadn't actually thought of this before, it's risk-free. I mean, we know that, and it's getting better because rates are going up. But it's also tax-free, right? And so, you know, where else are you going to get risk-free and tax-free investment that is 8 to 10%? Nowhere. And that's part of the reason that I've done solar as much as I have. Anyway, sorry to go on and on about that. Johanna, go ahead and with your third initiative.
Yeah, and thank you for calling that out, Steve. It's really important. I think there's a lot of misperceptions circulating now when it comes to energy because of what's been happening recently around tax credits or different incentives. And it's really important to hold up the long-term view for these different options and how beneficial they still are. And that ties very well to our third initiative, which is community collaboration and education. And that really is like the basis of how ACT started, was that a group of us got together to learn about what we could do in terms of local solutions. And through educating ourselves and collaborating, we developed Power. So it goes really well with, the whole point of your show here. And we believe firmly in rooting climate solutions and that type of community awareness, education, and empowerment, and strengthening collaboration. So we run a climate ambassadors program. We work a lot with the schools. We try to do quite a bit of different types of educational programs, and recently, more and more opportunities for the community to come together in ways where we are providing mutual care to each other that is tied into climate. So later this spring, we'll be hosting a repair cafe where folks can bring items that they might have that are in need of repair that they might otherwise discard, but that can be repaired. And volunteers from the community will be showing up and repairing those items for people. And we'll be getting to know each other better and having some food. And so, what might not on the face of it seem like a big climate action builds that type of social infrastructure and working together and reduces waste. So, a lot of more opportunities like that. And within our this final work area, we also run the Local Leads the Way program, which
The local
started
what?
Local Leads the Way
Oh, okay.
program, which started in January 2022, and is the program through which we support communities throughout the state that are interested in taking their own climate action. And bring those communities together for resource sharing and learning together and removing the duplication of effort that is all too common in so many areas of work, including climate work.
Well, local leads the way just makes so much sense when we have national leadership saying that solar and wind don't work, when in fact solar and wind are the future without any doubt. And it's especially frustrating to me when we've got this huge demand from data centers, and we're going to build nuclear power plants and things that are going to take, you know, 5 years to build when solar could be online tomorrow. So yeah, don't get me going.
Well, that's really why, I've so appreciated my experience with the Climate to Thrive over the past decade, and what I'm seeing from so many other communities in this state is really this awareness that people involved in local community are very wise in terms of what their communities need to function well. And what we need is to give them more of a voice and more of an opportunity to be making those decisions and not be held back by those different types of interests that might make it harder for them to access, for example, renewable energy in a way that's truly beneficial for their community. So yeah, that's really the basis of all of it.
Right, that's great. So we're down to 3 minutes. So Wilson, why don't we pivot over to you and start the conversation about how other communities can get involved with you guys, or how other communities can start an initiative themselves. And if you take a couple minutes, Joanna can then wrap that up, and then we'll wrap up the show.
Okay, great. Yeah, I think that as Johanna was mentioning about Local Leads the Way, a great way to get involved is to join monthly Local Leads the Way calls. We have an energy coaching call, a general call, and we're starting a resilience specific call this month. So if folks are interested in learning more about resilience planning in their community or energy coaching in their community, or just general climate action in their community, they should definitely join Local Leads the Way calls. And then I think getting involved in a local board or committee is something that I've seen to be really beneficial for people who are interested in this work in their communities. I have gotten to attend and participate in conversations in all of the sustainability committees on the island here, and they're able to drive a lot of work and a lot of change in their community if they are truly focused on the issues that they're trying to see done. And I think especially in rural communities, this is a really great place to be able to actually get some important work done in your town.
Right. And sometimes the local communities are most susceptible to disinformation and don't understand the reality. Joanna, we've just got 1 minute. Wrap us up on how anybody can maybe directly get involved with you with the climate to thrive.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's lots of opportunities. And so I'd say go to our website, which is climatetothrive.org. There's a specific Local Leads the Way page there. And we are turning 10 this year. And so we're having a bunch of events starting in late May and through June that are opportunities to come together in many different ways and celebrate the power that communities have to address climate change. There's going to be a Golden Oak Co concert here on MDI and lots of other events. So check out, those will all be coming up on the events page, and great time to come and meet us. And always reach out if you're interested in getting involved.
All right, well, fantastic. This is you're listening to Power for the People here on WERU. You have been listening to it on 89.9 and 99.9 with guest Joanna Blackman, Executive Director of A Climate to Thrive on MDI and beyond MDI, and Wilson Hames, the Manager of Community Engagement and Resilience. Join Power for the People next month, the last Friday of the month, at 4:30 for further information and programs and topics on Power for the People. Thank you very much, and see you next month.